You know, Warren, how often do we hear that veterans of not just World War II, but all these conflicts, just come home and clam up and don't tell the stories? How important now to see if we can educate, inform, and make people aware?
I think it's important that we learn from our past mistakes and understand what our current veterans are going through, for one thing. And I think that it's, you know, from the Revolutionary War on, for this country, we have all of our veterans to thank for the time that they've spent protecting our freedoms and continue to do so. Again, and I said this yesterday, but it's my soapbox. That's really what this is about, is honoring, educating through entertainment. And we need to recognize the stories about families who went their entire life, wives who were married to servicemen from World War II who never heard a story in 40 years until these artifacts came out. I used your word.
I know it's hard. Yeah, I'm still right. Not used to it.
But I can think of numerous times in the time that I've been around them where you watch the transformation of a 70 or 80-year-old man as he sits in the cockpit and grabs the throttle and turns into an 18-year-old and starts telling you what's wrong with your restoration, because the clock wasn't there. The clock was there. You know, I mean, their memories are so vivid sometimes about what they did or what they flew. And then the stories come out, and you start hearing families, sons, daughters, wives coming out and going, man, we had no idea. We had no idea that Dad went through that. And maybe it helps. Maybe it helps the veteran heal, yeah. I would say, and helps the families and their friends understand some of the things that they've watched throughout their life. They see, maybe they can step back and go, wow, you know, I just had no idea. And unfortunately, I think some of that comes too late for a lot of people on both sides. And again, I go back to maybe that's something that we're learning right now, where we try to appreciate our veterans and let them know how much we honor and appreciate what they've done for us when we're back here at home not going through that stuff, and help them get through what they've had to endure to do what they did.
The price,
you know,
they've paid.
Yeah. Yeah. And so that, you know, this airplane is, I look forward to a full circle thing of this airplane sitting in front of the Hazzie Center. I really do. I would love to see it sitting in front of the doors someday and people will walk around and walk by the P-40 that's hanging there and look at this airplane, and because it would, I don't know how to say it exactly, but it would be a really nice thing for me, because I had a chance to meet Don and be associated with him, and I think we built this airplane, again, to use Don as an example, but to honor Don's life and career and the people that were lived similar lives and careers with him. And it's just you know, it's an honor to be able to be part of this project with all the people that have been involved in it, and to bring it to this stage and be able to have it sit here so that people can look at it and maybe think about some of the stuff and maybe go home and read a book.
You know,
we'll figure out how to make that connection.
Yeah. You know,
I put you on the spot, Chris.
You didn't use the term PTSD.
I did not.
But it's obvious, I think, to many that term applied back a couple of hundred years ago. We
absolutely
just didn't call it the same thing.
Yeah.
And that obviously refers to veterans of World War II, World War I, and right on up to the present day. Another, you know, reason for us to be more aware, who
exactly
have not had that experience,
yeah,
as you described beautifully. One thing, talking here with Chris, what we didn't say in the introduction, Chris, the backseater in the Tomcat, has over 300 carrier landings. He's an aviator in the F-14 Tomcat. How much does that experience of yours, of those hours in the Tomcat, affect your ability to make what you do relevant at the Smithsonian?
I think it's huge. I mean, it allows me to appreciate at some level the history and what's involved behind the flying and the
I would
the
say the intensity.
It, yeah.
I would say, because you can relate to how intense those machines were when they were operating.
Well, a buddy of mine that I flew with, he has a T-28, and we've been scheming trying to figure out how can we get an F-14 out here to Oshkosh. And I don't know that that's quite possible because they've been going to the desert and getting destroyed because of the few that remain are in Iranian hands. But I would just also, if I could, David, add, you know, at the Smithsonian, we don't, by virtue of the nature of the collection, we don't have aircraft outside. Everything is inside. It's not flyable, obviously. It's obviously key and important part of the history and the storytelling. But what I think really the service, and I'll call it service, Bruce and Warren and the team that you and other colleagues here at Oshkosh do, is bring to life so that we can hear, we can see these things fly and give it a living history. So it's a great relationship. And just personally want to thank you, Bruce, for making this possible.
Oh, thank you. Yeah. It's a privilege. Yeah. And to AirVenture for making it happen,
absolutely,
too.
Yeah.
So, Bruce, what's your project now besides? Because I know you're not going to sit
the
on one.
F-14, I think, right?
You hope. No, we've got, working with Air Corps, we are well along in the restoration of a P-47 Thunderbolt that got pulled off the side of a mountain in Papua New Guinea that was shot down during the war in the South Pacific. And so that'll be the next project that's going to be coming out here in the next couple of years, and hopefully we'll be on this platform.
So. Warren, what's it mean to you to fly this airplane?
Well, first off,
with all the memories, I mean,
I want to say this is a great platform to put people on the spot. It's going to be done in a couple of years now, and you're going to let us come to the.
Absolutely, we're good.
It's really hard for me to describe, and I hate to repeat stuff that I said, you know, yesterday, but it's kind of a common deal. I painted a picture of a Mustang in a wall in my bedroom when I was 10, and I started dreaming, and you know. To be involved with the people, the restoration, and then to, you know, I test flew the airplane, and all these guys had to stand there biting their fingernails going, man, I hope you don't screw up. I hope you don't. You know, and I was doing the same thing. But you know, to go out there, obviously when you get in that position, you're all done thinking about anything except flying the airplane, that your job is to fly an airplane, and it becomes just an airplane, a beautiful, good-performing airplane. But you can't spend too much time just reminiscing until you get comfortable in the airplane. When I picked the Spitfire up in 2015, I had read Battle of Britain books my whole life. I had heroes from that. It was such a, you know, a conflict that was so black and white, so good and bad and everything else. And the airplane was a 74 mission vet. And I went through the same thing. I got comfortable in the airplanes for a couple of flights, and then I headed cross country in it. And I had a chance to sit there and reflect on the fact that there was Polish kids that flew this airplane that were chased out of their home country. And they sat in that seat, and this airplane hung onto that stick and looked over that nose. And I thought about and it was transferred to the Free French and flew over Normandy Beach during the invasion. And you can't help but occasionally sit there and think, you know, what feelings went through this cockpit from different people as they sat in here? How much fear, how much pride, how much anger, how much everything that went with that when they were sitting in this airplane, you know? And the airplanes were built for a gruesome task. I mean, you know, they were built to be killing machines. But they're so beautiful when you look at them. You know, you just sometimes you kind of got to overlook that, too, and think about the fact that they were coming out of an era of phenomenal progress in the world, but especially in aviation. You know, the era from 1929 to 1939 saw so much change in airplanes, but there's still the artistic eye in the design. When you look at a P-51 or a Spitfire or a P-40, and you look at the things that they did to make them pretty, even though they were building the fighter, they were still building pretty airplanes. And, you know, that's kind of, I guess, some of the stuff when I'm sitting in the cockpit and have a time to reflect on it. I think about that and hope the oil pressure stays where it's supposed to.
Speaking of practical evolution of airplanes, I'm just curious. I'm sure there's a couple of people in the audience. So you've got a lot of hours in a P-51D. How do you compare flying a P-51C to a P-51D?
Well, I don't have near as much time in this airplane as I do. This is a much slicker airplane. It's faster to the Razorback. The reason for the change was obvious. You can't see out of this airplane. And the British made a modification called the Malcolm Hood that helped that some. And then North American went on to do some mods on the airplane and included the bubble canopy, which I think you see all the way into the modern fighters today, to give that 360-degree field of view so that you can keep track of what's going on in the arena of the fight in there. This airplane's not good for that. But it's a really, really nice flying airplane. If you're not worried about getting shot down and having somebody behind you, it's perfect. You know?
Bruce, what's Don's legacy, Don Lopez?
Well, I think I touched upon it a little earlier that his legacy is an example of if we approach our problems from looking at them from the standpoint of viewing them as opportunities. Here is a guy, where he came from, what he did with it, and the career that he made and the contribution he made. We see that in so many of these vets that went on, came out of prior to the war. You know, really, these guys came out of the Depression and so on, and came back to this country after the war and made this country. And they just went ahead and created something. And Don is a prime example of that. And that, I think, is his legacy, and one that I think that we can all take heart in and take inspiration from.